Now we bring you live from WRAR Studios. It is the Defenders Live with our very own Miss Anna Edwards. Let's hear what Miss Anna has to say. So, Anna, take it away.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I'm your host, Anna Edwards. And today is Monday. The Defenders is brought to you as a production of The Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, and you can learn more at defendersfje.org and defendersfje.blogspot.com. You can give us a call at 804-644-5834 or send us an email at defendersfje@hotmail.com. We like to hear from you. We like to hear what you're thinking about, and we like to chew on it, spit it out, and give it back to you here on the air, and let you know what we're thinking about those things as well. Today is one of those days. It is an interesting segue we are in terms of the weather. We're moving from that sort of warm and fuzzy fall into what portends a potentially very cold and very active winter. So we will keep our eyes on things so that we know how to dress when we come in for the show and what to tell you. In terms of the mood, I always find that what's going on in the atmosphere actually has quite an effect on how the day goes, how I perceive things, and what they make me think about. Today is a little bit contemplative for that reason. And it's not that there isn't a tremendous amount going on. In fact, I would say that things are very much boiling around the globe, boiling here in Richmond, from the Christmas parade on Saturday to the most recent General Assembly of Occupy Richmond, to the fact that there has been a report that Iranian military shot down a U.S. drone that was in Iranian airspace. That follows hard on the heels of the fact that there was an attempt to describe an assassination attempt that was supposedly organized by the Iranian Majli, I believe, no, Basij, excuse me, the Basij, to assassinate a Saudi Arabian political figure here in the United States, in Washington, D.C., in fact, and that it was supposedly a Mexican or Colombian cartel assassin hitman. Anyway, it got more ludicrous as it as I'm trying to spit it out and my engineers are laughing at me. you know, and these things, as they are funny because they are ludicrous and ridiculous, are at the same time, of course, terribly serious because people are making decisions about these things. They are making decisions to craft stories. They are making decisions to push certain aspects of the information that we get in order to craft our mindset, in order to ensure that we either remain silent and on the sidelines while things are cooking and coming to full readiness, or that our cries against it are not heard or just not as effective. And so I think is why you end up with, as the show before me was describing in her final remarks there, the occupation movement is about that kind of frustration. If you are not going to listen, if you're not going to pay attention when people are trying to point things out before, you know, the pot is boiling, then when it boils, you cannot control where it boils over and for how long. And so that's sort of what I'm thinking about as I take a walk or look out the window or, you know, figure out what I'm going to talk about when I come to you each week. And there's more, of course. There is, you know, what's happening in Africa. There's a very interesting conference that took place at Brown University this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And it was an annual Chinua Achebe conference on basically the state of Africa at this moment. Chinua Achebe, if you don't know, is a noted author from Nigeria who now lives in the United States. He wrote really one of the most impactful books of my young life, and that is Things Fall Apart. And he has coordinated this conference at Brown University, I think several times, and the program for the conference this year is very timely. It's not your standard academic conference that is doing an overall historical piece without making it relevant. Each of the presenters, each of the speakers, focuses on an area of concern in Africa and some very targeted issues, such as, you know, how does South Sudan work itself as a new nation? How does it find its way? How does it reach the goals for separation? And is it possible? And what are the priority issues for a new nation and for this nation in particular? The presence of the U.S. military in the form of AFRICOM and its relationship to the East African community and its military presence along that coastline, and what it means for these nations to be in cooperative relationships with the United States military, and the fact that there are making themselves quote unquote useful all over the continent. At the same time, what is the relationship? What is the economic dynamic between China and its investments in Africa? And couple all of that with the fact that what is also going on is what has always gone on in one form or another with one commodity or another. But the UK, the United Kingdom, what most of us know as England and its expanded territories there on the island, and its land grabbing. That's the term that's been used, land grabbing in the continent in Africa. We're looking at an Africa that is struggling with its resources again being taken with very little return for the country. One of the things I like to point out, of course, is this idea that France, when it had to give up Western Sudan, which comprises all of those nations that we now know as Senegal, Mali, Guinea, Niger, Chad, I think, as well, Guinea-Bissau, anyway, a few other nations in that sort of western swath of West Africa that were known as Western Sudan. When they left Mali, for sure, I know, they pulled up their railroads, like they took up their toys and went home. And the result, of course, is that it's very difficult to move freight around that country. And what China is doing is investing in that kind of infrastructure. They are helping to build roads and lay lines for being able to move freight and improving that kind of urban and intra-urban infrastructure. What does it mean, though, when a country invests to that degree? What do they get in return, right? One loan, I know, you know, was made to the government of Mali in order to pay a Chinese company for their workers to come and do the work. So where was the benefit for the people of Mali in terms of the work that was generated? Now, ultimately, the road is going to benefit the people. But what, you know, how long is that road and will there be more? That road in particular, I know, goes from Bamako to Ségou, which is great. That's two major cities. But there's Mopti and Djéné further up the road and on into Timbuktu and the Gao region. These are all areas that are along the Niger River and are the primary route for moving goods from the interior on out to the major rivers and then on out to places like Senegal and to the coastal countries for trade purposes. So I say all of these things, you know, again, we're just talking about what's bubbling, what's out there, what's going on. What are all the things that I don't know about that I'm not going to remember to bring to even this conversation because of my focus. So it behooves us again, you know, to pay attention, but it behooves us as well to have these days where we contemplate what we have learned, where we ponder and where we think about and synthesize and analyze. And that means, you know, a lot of compare and contrasting. It means laying the historical events side by side. One of the things that I'm learning about more and more is the history of Mali in relation to the history of the United States. And I may have mentioned before that, you know, the city of Ségou, which was a kingdom, and the city of Richmond are approximately the same age. I think Ségou was founded somewhere around 1720, 23, and Richmond was, I think, chartered or begun around 1737, somewhere in there. So if you can follow those two countries and understand what was going on at the same time in those two places, you begin to get a sense of even how some decisions were impacted. You know, the transatlantic trade in slaves was also a trade in goods. There were food products and plant material and things like that that were going back and forth. And the people who were being selected, at least in the earliest years, were often selected for their regional skills. Now, that's, of course, very early on. It's before it becomes exclusively about labor. And if you look at the way in which it impacted Haiti versus the way it impacted the United States and specifically Virginia, you begin to see where some of these dynamics play out. When we talk about the environment and the condition of our planet, and the fact that we may be looking at paying for this sort of rapacious attitude that we've had toward its resources, that if it was there and we could get it, the more we could get, the better, because it would fuel our economy. And our economy being capitalist-driven, being driven by profit, by the need to keep currency moving, whether you're talking about the cash flow or you're talking about the resource flow, those things have to keep moving. And if they don't, the economy stagnates. So the U.S. could be seen as the richest country in the world, the most powerful country in the world. But if everybody stops buying houses, as we witnessed, our economy falters and shuts down. If people are given what they are called tax relief, and you get your $1,100 little bonus from the government, which they think you're going to go spend, and you put it in a savings account because you no longer have a retirement account, or because you know your car is going to break down in the next 3 months and you're going to need the money to fix that car, then you are not spending to stimulate the economy. It has to keep flowing. The pot is boiling. The pot is bubbling. You are listening to The Defenders Live here on WRIR. It's 97.3 Low Power FM Radio. It's Richmond's radio for the rest of us. And we want you to tune in at WRIR.org. This show airs on Mondays, of course, at noon, and on Tuesdays at noon online and on your radio dial. We're at 97.3. And to learn more about the Defenders, it's defendersfje.org and defendersfje.blogspot.com. And today we're having a little chat, and we're having a little chat about thinking and about what is going on that we have to think about. What are the events that are going on that we need to be sure that we're paying attention to? Redistricting and creating minority-majority districts here in the state of Virginia. What is the impact on school board representation? What is the impact on who will represent you next time versus who is representing you now? How does that affect your ability to vote? There are votes going on in places all over the world that we're being informed about in various ways. And how are we paying attention to those versus how we are paying attention to our own electoral system and how we participate in it and who gets to participate in it? In Mauritania, which is another of those formerly known as Western Sudan nations, that it's an Islamic country, but it is also a Black African country. It is also a, in terms of religion, it is primarily Muslim, but it is also, you know, the native traditions as well as Christian, as well as the variations that exist with the older Arab community, those people who made up the slave class, the enslaved class of that region. And then there are the other peoples who were in that country as well, the Bambara, the Pul, the those from Senegal, from Mali, from Niger, and from surrounding areas. These different peoples in a country like Mauritania that is now trying to figure out how to define itself. And there is a lot of discussion about the fact that it's coming off as a in the balance of it, that it is a pro-Arab and not supportive of the various Black African populations. And that this is a dynamic that has challenged the Saharan and Northern African versus Sub-Saharan African dynamic. It is one that is playing out in its way in the Sudan as well, but it's not as simple as that. It's not simply race, and it's not simply economy, and it's not simply tribal, and it's not simply resources. It's all of those things. And it's not easy, and it's one of the reasons why it's going to be so difficult for this new nation to figure out how it's going to make it. One of my first questions was, who are going to be your trade partners when there is still at this moment no infrastructure? How does a new country get an economy going that is necessary to support its people? In Mauritania, one of the challenges that has come up recently is a lot of protests about the fact that Black Africans in that country are feeling discriminated against and marginalized. And one of the manifestations is the national census, and the fact that the kinds of requirements that are coming down for people to identify themselves as Mauritanians so that they can be included in the national census are discriminating and putting out people. And they will refer to a period when entire populations of Black Africans were essentially put out of the country and said, you are not Mauritanians and you have to go. And that was essentially a displacement, a mass displacement of people. Again, we can draw parallels to the struggles here in the United States, the civil rights struggle, the Jim Crow laws, and the poll taxes, all those dynamics which at various times have played against complete and full access to the electoral process. And as we struggle to make sure that those processes are intact here in the United States, we should remember to be engaged and vocal about the fact that those processes should be engaged thoughtfully and with an understanding of the localized dynamics of how these things are playing out in other countries as well. We can learn from them. Since we are obviously still struggling with them ourselves, we have not solved them. We are not necessarily the be-all and end-all. We represent a beacon, but maybe the beacon that we represent is the beacon of struggle. The Black community in the United States has been engaged in struggle from the minute it hit these shores, since the minute it became the Black community of the United States, which has not been, you know, a done deal. As well, you have communities in themselves are always sort of engaged in struggle to identify who they are and figure out what kind of force they represent as a national group or, you know, simply as a group of people with like interests. Whether that unity is such that you can identify a singular goal, the way in which, for example, President Obama was elected, that was a moment, that was a very instructive and interesting moment that you could get that much of the population to say, we are going to elect this man. There were many reasons why that was possible in that moment, and many reasons why we celebrated the process that was engaged at that time. But we stopped thinking at a certain point and forgot that what we were also doing was electing a president of the United States. We were not electing a president of the Black United States. We were not electing, you know, our best friend. We were electing, again, from the pool of those who run to become president of the United States. And whatever our most idealistic hopes were around that, The agenda of the United States is not set by one individual. And you have to know that the person who seeks that office knowing what he is stepping into. So it's just to say, don't assume any one thing about the dynamic, but do remember that, you know, the United States is a capitalist nation, and I would say that we are a constitutional corporate democracy. And really, we could be other than that, but we are not. And it is only when you see movements like Occupy Richmond come back into play, where it comes down to the people vocalizing and the people insisting and the people beginning to break their own rules because they're not heard, because the process is not working. And it's why the occupation is taking so many interesting forms all over the country that are specific to where they are and are specific to the concerns of those people. There's some interesting struggles between occupation movements and the Tea Party. And the fact that there are those who think that there's an alignment there. And there are other people who are adamant that there is not an alignment there, that the occupation movement is progressive and has some agendas that are definitely not in alignment with the Tea Party. And yet some of the struggles and some of the people's concerns are very similar. So these things that we are thinking about, these things in 2011 as it comes to a close, we can't simply chat about them on a nightly news soundbite level because it's really coming home. It has landed on so many people that it's really is unavoidable, and it's not acceptable to sort of step out. You're in it. You're in it now, whether you want to or not. And in some ways, even if you're not vocal with your words, the decisions that you are making, that we are making, that we are having to make, the realizations that we are coming to, for example, I'm in my 50s. Holy cow. And I'm looking at the fact that in the real practical job market, to a certain extent, I am not an eligible person across the board. People who are in their middle ages, if you are not in some way set, and even if you thought you were set, the real terror becomes that everything that you have invested in to that point, whether it's your education or whether it's your house or your children's education or a business, a small business, there is absolutely nothing stable about the economy that is going to ensure that we are going to have what we have been led to believe we should have. And that is some kind of retirement, some kind of stability. I don't even know what the, you know, old folks home situation is going to be when I'm in my 70s or 80s and might be looking in that regard. That unnerves me a little bit. So, you know, in those years, I'll be trusting to my children and, you know, and my family and the fact that maybe as a society, we're going to come around to the fact that we are going to be looking after our old people in the way that we used to, not simply putting them off in assisted living facilities that most of us can't afford. So those are all the thoughts rolling through my head. What's rolling through yours? And tell me, one of the things I wanted to find out from you, too, is what is an event or a book that has stimulated your political thinking, your progressive thinking about what needs to happen in this world? Send it to defendersfje@hotmail.com, and we'll take it up in an upcoming show, maybe even work it into a conversation with a guest. The books that we read, the magazines, the newspaper articles, the conversations that we have, the events that we attend, those things that mark our political sensibilities and maybe even change the directions of our lives, those are key moments, and I'd be really interested in you sharing those moments with us so that we can share them with other people. That would be a good thing. Some of the things that are coming up in Richmond, with all the work that has gone on this year around anti-war, local events, the occupation movement, foreign policy, threats of war, You know, I've got a sign in my yard that says end war, but I think I'm going to have to change it to prevent war. And in January, the Virginia People's Assembly, the 4th Virginia People's Assembly, will take place. And I hope very much that you will check Facebook for announcements, get on the lists, and join us for the Virginia People's Assembly. It's a coming together of social issue organizations from across the state of Virginia. They come together. I believe this year it's on January 14th. There's more information on the Virginia Defender newspaper. If you don't have one near you, it's available online at defendersfje.org. And consider, again, identifying that issue. If you are working with an organization in the full range of issues, from immigration to, you know, voting rights, from, you know, homelessness and housing to food access, from environmental issues to foreign policy issues. Across the board in Virginia, there are people concerned and working on health care issues, women's health, children's health, men's health, all of these things, aging, stability, the economy, coming together on January 14th to really hash this out and show to the world what it is that we are concerned about here in Virginia, who's paying attention to it and who's not, and why our voices need to continue to be heard. And then in March, there is the United National Anti-War Coalition Conference that is going to be taking place in Chicago, Illinois. And we'll have more about that and the focus of that anti-war conference in shows to come. So thank you for tuning in today and following along, and I hope that we will know that you are listening next Monday here on Defenders Live. Thanks for tuning in.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.